Reading rounding off their away games for this season with a loss to Burton Albion at the weekend. A Sam Smith penalty, the first since Port Vale away, would you believe, couldn't push us on to salvage a draw against the Brewers, which leaves us looking at the visit of the Tangerines this coming weekend for the final chance to grab some points in what has been a very, very topsy-turvy season indeed. We'll be asking, though, does it actually matter? Do we really care about these two results? Maybe we do, maybe we don't. My voice is already going. Yeah, I've just gone Scottish. Yeah, exactly. Just gone Michael Craig in the intro. So, yeah, why not? Why not? Ross, join me as always. How are you, sir?
Doing pretty well, thank you. I'll try and get some clips up. Got the new England 2024 away kit ready for the Euros. No doubt about it, I am ready to get hurt again. So that tells you all you need to know, really. I'm looking forward to the Euro in the summer, and one more Reading game to go. I'll enjoy this week, and then we'll move on to internationals. After a year of working through our own central midfield questions, I'm looking forward to just watching Jude Bellingham get it done in the summer.
Well, I mean, I have to say, it caused a lot of furore when that kit came out. But as a Welshman, I do quite like that kit. It's quite charming in a lot of respects. So, yeah, you wear it well, sir.
Look at the sides, you got the fancy stuff. Yeah. Go ahead.
Although, actually, Joe, on that note, so I, with the Euros, they always knock out a sticker album, right? And I've collected them for years and years and years. And I said to myself, I'm approaching 40. This is the first year I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to collect them. And then my son they were given away like sticker books. Yeah, there you go. You got the World Cup one.
Yeah.
They were given away sticker books at his school. So he got one. But his first was by Topps, not Panini. And secondly,
they
went to print before the playoffs were done and dusted. So Wales have got a page. Like, this is even worse.
Oh, no.
This is what you could have had.
That is bad, yeah. So the Panini thing, by the way, I'm glad you brought that up, because the Panini, I'm obviously a fan of a Panini sticker album also. And that is a huge shame that they've moved it over to Topps. Topps, obviously, a huge company in terms of baseball card stuff. Look at that. There's Wales from the World Cup. But anyway, great visual feature, great audio feature there. Sorry, I'll put that down now. Thank you, listeners. Make sure there's a clip of that online for you.
Yeah, exactly. Well, talking of thank yous, massive thanks as always to ZTZ Films, who support us, who have supported us, who will hopefully, we haven't started negotiations for next season yet, but hopefully they will continue to support us next season as well, so we can bring you more lowbrow, unprofessional, hacked together content just like this one that you're listening to right now. We are on episode 377. This is the Tilehurst End, and we are going to dive straight into the recap against the Brewers.
Come rain or shine, it's time to relive the latest match action with the recap.
This podcast is sponsored by ZCZ Films, Reading's oldest ultras.
Talking of Brewers, Ross, you see I'm wearing a Renegade Brewery t-shirt. Just that.
It's very nice. Yeah, it's very nice. Did Billy Brewer have anything to do with that one, or where does that one come?
No, but what they do have something to do with is a new lager that they've branded El Jefe for the game on Saturday, which will be available from the fans then before the game, and I think it's at the Nag's Head in Reading as well. So. Just what I've dropped.
Considering we had the do or dune earlier on, you got the El Jefe right first time this time. Very good.
Well, Bobbins taught me last week because I'm like,
okay, that's true.
Like proper, El Jefe, but it's not that, is it?
Right. Well, there's going to be a flag too, right? I think I saw that being Mega tested flag. Out in the stands recently.
There's going to be paella outside as well.
Very nice.
All going to be very nice indeed. I've got my Spain track jacket ready.
Excellent.
So buzzing for that one. But anyway, that's Renegade Brewery for you. Congratulations to them on bringing in a brand new lager for the game. Thank you very much. Looking forward to trying it. Right, let's talk about the previous Saturday before we get into the excitement of the next Saturday. I mean, obviously it was Inflatables Day. We'll come back to that later on because it's always a classic, that one. I mean, it very nearly began in our favour. 27 seconds it took for Sam Smith to get a shot off. That had gone in, you would have to say, without going sort of full BBC pundit, that it would have been a very different game. It wasn't to be. Mustafa Carayel, 4 minutes, he took the lead. Don't know why I'm laughing. And then he got another one 11 minutes later. We are going to kind of talk about the goals in a little bit more detail, because personally, I think they were, completely avoidable, as most goals are. But we had Kimura, who was one-on-one with Pereira shortly after. They were nearly three up in 15 minutes, which shows you where we were at defensively, really, in this game.
Yeah.
Lewis Wing sort of got us out of jail with a free kick. I mean, if you haven't seen it, it's a wonderful free kick, which is what we've come to expect. You know, we're kind of almost expecting this, you know, every single game now from Lewis Wing, but it was absolutely delicious. That was 34 minutes. And really, for me, the absolute kicker on 42 minutes, defensively, absolutely shambolic, really. Kimura, am I saying that right? Kimura? Doing a Della here. 42 minutes in. It is Kimura. Is it Kimura?
Kimura, you're going with? Kamwa. I'm not even sure. Yeah, that's a difficult one. Number 18 for Burton. Bobby Kamwa, maybe? Yeah. Not sure.
Well, anyway.
You have to tell us, Burton fans.
He not went in, which, again, as I said, was very, very poor defending. That was on 42 minutes, and they went in 3-1 up at halftime, which was, you know, tricky for us, really. I say shortly after, about 59 minutes, Kelvin was brought down in the box. For me, it was a penalty. Sam Smith converted it with absolute aplomb. Only our second one of the season, which is absolutely insane when you think about it, really. Latest one, or the one before that, was Port Vale away, way back in August. And then it just sort of fizzled out, really. You know, they were, Burton were, you know, were scrapping like rutting reindeer to stay in the league, and they managed to do that. Or they are looking like they're managing to do that, really. It was a massive result for them, which unfortunately saw our friends Port Vale go the opposite way.
Correct.
I mean, I've sort of fluffed it through that in terms of the main bits, Ross. Do you want to add anything to it? Like, are we
positive? No, I think that's... for sure. But like, let me put it this way. When the when Burton lost in midweek, they lost to Cheltenham in midweek, and that was a game that was apparently quite different in terms of performance levels for them from their previous game, when they had shown some fight trying to get out of the relegation zone. I think that was a 2-1 win on the road against Stevenage that they'd had previously. But then they went and lost to Cheltenham. As soon as they did that, my brain was like, oh, they're going to win this weekend. Because I've been of the opinion now for a while that the bottom four in League One, who have been there for about a month, if not longer now, so that's Cheltenham, Fleetwood, Port Vale and Carlisle, I think those are the four worst teams, unfortunately. And again, apologies to our friends at Port Vale. But I do think, and I have thought for a while, those are the teams that are going down. Cheltenham are pretty much, Cheltenham are the only team left that could stay up. And they're a team that has just nominated Luke Southwood as their player of the season, which that, really
that just
tells
to
you
add that, they've got a very difficult game. They've got Peterborough on Tuesday night, which, you know, Peterborough obviously dead sets to be in the playoffs, but they can still get to third, Peterborough, with their game in hand. So, they're going to be looking for sort of home field advantage. I've turned into you. What is home field advantage? Just being at home is that really? But yeah, it's going to be very difficult for Cheltenham to stay up, I think.
Yeah. So in general, then, I guess my point would be that Burton obviously had a lot of energy, a lot of... they really needed to win this game. This is kind of the one where they could almost put things behind them. And so I'm not surprised that they came out of the traps absolutely flying. Now, that first goal that Reading concede, where it kind of comes in to the near post low from a free kick, I think. It's a really odd and awkward spot for a free kick for Reading. It's almost like a hockey short corner sitting like right on the edge of the penalty box there. And it's a tricky one to defend. Kelvin actually manages to block the first shot, and then as he's blocking it, it gets caught in his legs. He can't turn and find it, basically. And let me use another hockey, but ice hockey reference here. When that happens in ice hockey, everyone yells feet at you, which is quite funny when you can't find it and it's lost down there. So somebody needed to yell feet at Kelvin. It didn't happen. You can't blame Pereira for when that one got smashed into the back of his net. You can blame Pereira for the second goal. It's probably the first one that is, I think, probably his fault. of this season. The actual finish is really, really nice from the Burton player. And I think you can tell from that just like how much emotion they were riding on, because that ball is just like moving. Every single touch that the player takes as he makes his way towards the goal for that goal, it looks like a ball that's sitting up nicely for him to hit, basically. And then eventually he does hit it, and it goes in off the post. Pereira, though, is the one who's cleared it out, and he's cleared it out directly to the player who then drove in. So I think there's some little mistakes in there and little unfortunate moments, but certainly with that first one, perhaps you can say that it could have stacked the near post a little bit better. And with that second one, Pereira, needs to do better with his clearance there. He has normally been really good with his distribution this season. But in general, I just saw this game kind of like Shrewsbury at home about a month or so back, whereby Reading were the better team. If you look at the post-game stats, you'll see we had most of the possession and more of the threat, even though that they scored more goals. But just not really all there. And also, I think it's worth noting that Nibs didn't necessarily have the best game, or wasn't allowed to, actually. Sorry, I know this is going a little bit long now, so this is the last thing I'll say about the game. Nibs is obviously a huge part of what Reading do. He's really important to Reading winning the ball back and all of those kinds of things, especially in terms of like winning the ball back, when the opposition have just gained it off us and then allowing us to attack like a disorganized defense. Burton decided to avoid this possibility by just completely bypassing Nibs for the most part. So I saw a lot of balls just going up and over Nibs from the back line and forcing Dorsett or a Brefa to turn around and deal with that, basically. I think worth noting, Dorsett's also had a little bit of a tough return to the team too. So, I guess I did care quite a bit about this week, but more from a perspective of it being quite an interesting game with some different key performers than previous weeks.
Yeah, it's wrong to say I didn't care. I mean, obviously I did, but about the result? No, not at all. I mean,
right. So that's harsh of me. So I don't mean to say that you didn't care.
No, that's fine.
We both always care when there's a team in blue and white hoops or purple turtle kits. That's the important thing.
Or the grey lion. Yeah, exactly.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
We'll see what we get next year. Who knows? Who knows? I think from a result point of view, and I was watching the game and you think, 2-0 down already. And then, it could have been 3-0 within, 15, 16 minutes. Like, what you didn't want at that point is to get utterly embarrassed by a team that was, have not been good all season. And I'm not trying to play the hierarchy card here, but on any given day, 9 times out of 10, we'll be able to get a result against Burton in terms of the quality we've got. I just felt that it wasn't through lack of trying or effort from the players. It was just, they just took their foot off the pedal. And, I saw a few people going after Pereira, which I didn't really agree with, because he's had, he's had a suitable block of games. And he's going to make these mistakes. They're just going to happen in goalkeepers. I mean, very different. But you look at the Blackburn goalkeeper yesterday, which was absolutely embarrassing, really, from him. We're not quite at that level with Pereira at all. But there are going to be, there are going to be games, in this block that he wasn't going to do well in. And it just happened to be one of those, really.
I think it's worth saying, Ben, that he made 4 saves, and he made some good ones that stopped it from being more embarrassing. There's the one right before the third goal is conceded, whereby it's sort of the Burton player drives it in and it's deflected into the bottom left corner, and Pereira is able to shift his feet and then get really like far across his goal down to his left. So I think he still had some good saves, but definitely a few mistakes.
Then we're going to talk about all the positions in the summer in terms of the pods that we do, and what we think might happen and where we think we can strengthen and which players will leave. But for me, as it stands at the moment, I don't see us not having Pereira as number one. August or whatever it is when our season starts, unless something incredible happens in the free player department in the goalkeeping area. So we'll see what happens there. You briefly touched on Nibs earlier. I mean, I want to talk a little bit about the subs just to kind of round off the game as a whole. which I thought they were a little bit strange, if I'm honest. So he brought on Michael Craig for Nibs, and he brought on Mola for Abrafa, both on 70 minutes. Now, when you're sort of chasing the game a little bit and you're looking for potentially trying to get, you know, because at that point it was 3-2, you're looking at trying to get something out of the game. Do you think that bringing on Craig and Mola show a bit more of a kind of a, I want to get something out of this game mentality? Or do you think he was just trying to mix up the game in those areas as much as he could?
I think there's a few things going on, right? So I think the tactically within the game, like the switch here was made to get Wing further up the field. So basically, we played in 4-1-4-1. Wing started in that one, the solo six position, and then Elliot and Nibs ahead of him in those eight, obviously Nibs sort of 8-10 position that they kind of play. Elliot had another good performance, I thought, on Saturday. He's still got some way to go, but I think that, I don't know. I think that he's definitely the second best, if not the possibly the most talented of the three young center mids we have from the showing that he's done in the last month. But you got to see that obviously come out over a long period of time. So anyway, we started in that sort of 4-1-4-1. Doing the substitution to bring Nibs off basically allowed us to push Wing further forward. So Craig went in as that solo six. I do think that that was probably the right decision. However, I did think it was odd that he brought on Mola at the same time. Because usually with Mola, we're kind of using him to go, you know, inside the field and help to knock balls down. Those balls are being pushed forward usually by Lewis Wing. So I would normally think we'd have some combination of Wing being further back and delivering those balls forward to Mola. And rather than, you know, having both Wing and Mola already up there. Obviously, Wing did get some other shots off, so they did get him into some positions that they wanted him in. But yeah, it was a little bit of an odd one to me. I think that a lot of this was down to, like I was talking about, Nibs just being completely bypassed by some of Burton's game plan. And that kind of led to issues for Reading in terms of, all right, how do we deal with that? And what do we want to try and, you know, accomplish in the second half to nullify Burton doing that. And I think that putting Wing further up allowed us to dominate possession better, keep attack sustained longer. And that showed. I mean, in the second half and after the substitutions, we had all of the momentum. So, yeah, I think that it was an odd substitution in that we've seen the same substitutions over and over again with Sellers this season. But the fact that Nibs was the player identified by Burton, I think, to avoid, that made the substitutions different as well.
I mean, he had Savage, Makairu, Rashisha, and then Wareham still available at that point. Brought on Wareham. 81 minutes for Ben Elliott. Nice to see where I'm out again, really. I think he's one that I'm most excited for next season, providing he stays, of course, because actually I think there's a lot of potential for him to, you know, certainly to start a lot more of the cup games. Hopefully we get a bit further this season, but also bringing him on a little bit earlier to try and impact some games. And this will have been really good experience for him because, you know, he started basically as a trialist in the under-21s. I believe he was a trialist at the start of the season anyway. And then he was signed. So. Noel Hunt snapped him up along with a kind of a collection of other players. And he's the one really that you look at from the under-21s over the course of the season that's really started to push himself a little bit really in terms of being in and around the squad. I mean, obviously you look at Savage, Makairu and Rashisha. I mean, Rashisha is out of contract at the end of the season. Makairu is obviously on a loan. And then you've got big question marks over Savage. And I think overall, you've got big question marks over the central midfield spaces in terms of players staking a claim. Lewis Wing has kind of come out after the game and said that he will be here next season, which is always a little bit of a tricky one, I think, because if Middlesbrough or someone come knocking, he's not going to turn that down, is he? So
might not want to go back to Borough. You never know.
Yeah, yeah, okay. But, you know, wherever. But in terms of where, you know, he could end up and the teams that could come in, it's always I always get a little bit nervous when players say that. We'd love to see Lewis Wing in a Reading shirt next season, but we're Reading fans. We're realistic of that. You know, we could have our pockets picked, and I don't think anyone at the start of the season would have seen Nelson Abbey have the impact that he did and then end up in the Greek Super League. So, you know, there is an element of that, you know, working out really, hopefully in our favour. But I think realistically, the central midfield is going to be the biggest headache for Sellers. And I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, these players on the bench already are kind of knocking on the door and saying, look, what are we doing here? You know, do you fancy me or not? Do you want me to stay here or not? Because I need game time. And he's been through this phase where he's suddenly realised that Elliot is, you know, he's good in that position. But as we've said time and again, we're overly blessed there. And these players, their stage of the career, need to be playing football.
Can I give you some devil's advocacy there?
Yeah, go on.
I want to talk. Okay, so let's think a little bit about the way that. How do I want to phrase this? In my opinion, right, Man City's best performer this year is Phil Foden. He's been obviously he came into their team massively when De Bruyne went down in the first game of the season. He kind of took over that role as the primary creator, but he can also score. So Foden is a player that England have known about for a very long time. I think a lot of England fans have known as a really high talent for a long, long time. Obviously, he won that Youth Cup with, or the Youth World Cup, was it, with Danny Loader, I think, was on that team too. So player who's been around at a high level for a very long time. But Pep didn't like immediately bring him in and play him in, you know, like 35 games a season or something like that. It's kind of, if you look back at his stats, it's like 20 games, 20 games, 20 games for the first few years. And then this season is the first time when he's really been in that team the whole time. I don't think there are that many. I mean, they're becoming more common now, but I don't think there are that many like Jude Bellinghams out there whereby they are the most mature and physically impressive, you know, body or whatever by the time they're 20. I don't think there are that many people out there like that. I think that is freak of nature stuff, basically. So I think that way of managing the introduction to like the first team for youth players, I think that's important. So on the one hand, yes, obviously, like you step down to a lower level from a team like Manchester United or Chelsea or Tottenham, you want to be playing like as much as possible. But I think in terms of what might be best for your development in terms of a central midfielder, probably, you know, a player that wants to be playing until they're what, 35, 37 in the right environment. I don't necessarily hate the style of slowly bringing them in with around 20 to 25 start seasons. And it is to me about, can we get to a time in, you know, 3 years time when Wing's deal ends, whereby Craig, Elliot and Savage are those three key central midfielders for us. If we can, that's going to be a really good piece of management. I doubt that happens because, you know, football's football and people get their heads turned all the time. But I do think you're right that it's going to be Wing and somebody else. I'm just not sure if that needs to be an issue for Reading as soon as next season.
That'd be interesting how it plays out. I think the positive is that our season ends next Saturday, right? That's it. Everyone knows that. So come, you know, 3:30 next Saturday, it's all done and dusted, all finished. And we've got sort of 3.5 months really. And what I'd like us to do for once is just get stuff done early. And for, again, I don't know the timeline, but for him to have conversations with these players and go, look, you can all go. I really want you to say, here's a contract offer. The players that are under contract but potentially aren't happy with what they've got this season or how they've been handled over the last few months or whatever, again, that's another conversation in terms of the way that, you know, the coaches handle this. And this is where, you know, this is where I hope the man management, you know, he's kind of learned from that and it comes into play, because it does seem like it's all or nothing in those positions with certain players. Likewise, you know, there are still a lot of hangers on in the squad that really, I hope, are kind of showing the door. You know, Hutchinson, Dean, you know, players like that, really.
I was going to ask you that, Ben, like who, obviously Hutchinson and Dean are on that list. And I'm putting you on the spot here a little bit, but for you, who else doesn't stay? Who doesn't come back next season? Is there any player that you say with thanks, you know, you're heading out?
I think the obvious one is David Button, personally.
Yeah, okay. who has a deal through next year, I think.
But I think realistically, you know, he's not a good. He's not a good number two, because I don't know what he'd be like as number two. He wouldn't be playing, put it that way. But like, I don't see him staying. Dean Bouzanis would go for me. I mean, I'm literally looking down the squad list.
Is Makaira coming back for you? Would you want Makaira to come in for next year?
No, I don't think.
Makaira, I think I'd be going elsewhere with that.
Our dear sweet Tom Holmes will leave, obviously, off to Luton.
He will.
It's
kind of felt like he's been gone, actually. I'm glad you mentioned him, because it's been sad that he's been injured, really, for this whole... I mean, I guess not super sad, because it's allowed Mbenge and Binden, which is potentially a more long-term partnership to form. But yeah, a little bit sad to see his loan return sort of marred like this.
I would be interested to see what kind of conversation has had around Andy Yeardon, because despite the fact that I think he's played some of the best football for us this season over the last, you know, 3 or 4 years, I'm not sure the regularity of games is going to show at his age that he's able to consistently play. You know, I might be wrong. I don't know. But he would be one that I'd have a question mark over.
I wonder how Yeardon feels about the club too at this stage. Like, I know he's club captain. I wouldn't begrudge Yeardon at all if he wanted to go and spend the last few years of his career captaining a different team and just having a nice relationship with the fans. And like,
and he's been through it. You know, he's been through it, to be fair to him. And he has, for me, he's come out the other side, if only just for his playing stance, you know, and the way that he's kind of adapted to games. And, you know, he's kind of dragged us kicking and screaming in some instances, really. So, you know, I have a lot of respect for what he's been able to do this season compared to what he was like last year. I think we need to have a sensible conversation about Kamara at some point, because if it hasn't been this year and he's not been able to really kind of at least get on the bench or in and around the squads regularly and get some minutes, I don't see that working out. Rashisha, I don't think anyone can really comment on, because no one's really seen him.
It's a tough one.
You know, Aziz, I don't think will stay. I think that's probably, you know, something that's probably in the pipeline for him to have gone. And Makaira is the other one. I wouldn't be disappointed if he didn't stay. The rest of them, I would really like a core here to stay, because, you know, I think there are some good players in that team. You know, I really do.
Yeah.
We'll see what happens. Final one from the weekend. What was your best inflatable?
All right, favorite inflatable from the weekend. There was a amusing part where the Reading fans were throwing, I don't know, bits of paper or something at the goalkeeper over and over and over again. It's the wonderful thing. I was watching the game with a person who doesn't normally watch football, by the way, at the weekend. And
sorry about that.
It's a wonderful. It's all right. It was all right. They were game for it, you know. But it was funny, like, she, you know, talking to them about how close the fans are, you know, to the players, and especially the goalkeepers in the lower leagues. And you really are, you know, you've got people like a yard or two behind you, just like, you know, chucking little bits of paper or whatever, spitball or whatever, you know, the kids get up to these days. Favorite inflatable, though, was when after this is going on, the keeper's getting more and more annoyed. There's one kid right in the place where the things are being thrown from, just sort of leans over and he just starts playing air guitar on his little inflatable Stratocaster. I just thought that was, it was weirdly, it was weirdly sort of creepy is the wrong word, threatening almost. I don't even know, but it was quite funny.
I love the idea. I can't concentrate because there's a child of around 14 years old who is playing an inflatable guitar behind.
He was just making intense eye contact with the goalkeeper and playing his inflatable guitar. It's just very threatening energy.
That's really funny. There wasn't many, was there, obviously, because of restrictions that Burton had put on our fans. But there's a couple of flamingos in there. It's always quite funny to see them. A couple of bananas. Yep. There was a willy with a face on it. If you haven't seen it, I'm sure you can imagine what the face actually was of. I think I've told this story before, but when we got promoted to Premier League for a second time, we went to play Birmingham on the last game of the season. And we lost. It was terrible. I think it was like 2 or 3-0. I can't remember anyway. It's the only time I've ever cheered opposition goals, put it that way. And the away end was completely full of inflatables, right? And someone brought a paddling pool. So nice. we had a lot of fans there, and this, you know, people were chucking, you know, the standard like dinosaur, someone had like a ghetto blaster, beach balls, all that kind of, you know, generic inflatable stuff. And I look over because we were quite near the front, and to my left, this paddling pool was just coming down. Like literally, and it's like, but it was obviously you know, empty because that would be lethal. But it was just really funny, right. Like a full paddling pool that probably cost about 50 quid or whatever. Just understand. And I just thought that was really funny, and it stayed with me
again.
So, yeah, you know, I'd love to have an inflatable at the SCL. I'd love to have an inflatable day at the SCL. I think that'd be brilliant. But
I think it'd be good. Fill it up with Renegade Brewery beer and chuck it down the stand. Everyone will have a lovely time.
Exactly. Yeah, it'd be fantastic.
Talking
of fantastic, we're going to head straight into the mailbag. We've got a few little tidbits to get into. So we're going to do that right now.
Keep up to date with all things Reading FC. Follow the Tilehurst End on Facebook and Twitter.
This podcast is proudly sponsored by ZCZ Films. Remember, if you want to get involved in sponsoring the show, drop us an email to thetilehurstend@gmail.com.
Welcome back to episode 377 of the Tilehurst End podcast, the penultimate one that we will do in season, if you like, this season.
Obviously. Off the weekend.
Yeah, exactly. We've got a few little bits and bobs that we're going to get into. We haven't had much, which... is not surprising given the kind of the overall apathy that Saturday kind of brought upon, really.
Just think that the previous week was just the emotional release, wasn't it? Yeah. So that is what it is. I'm sure there'll be good emotions again this weekend coming.
Right, let's go with... So you'll be pleased to know that Benjamin Vickers is back and he's alive.
Excellent.
And well.
It is his.
He made no reference to getting in touch, but he has got in touch. And he started off with a big meaty one. So get ready for this one. With the season effectively, in brackets, over, put these early season events in order of their significance to our final league position. This is a great question.
This is a good question. I saw this.
We expect nothing less from him, really. Number one, Andy Carroll penalty miss at Port Vale. Number two, beating Millwall away in the Pizza Cup. Number three, Hutch's they're not ready interview. Which one for you out of those three is the most significant?
I'm going to go with the most significant being Millwall 4-0, which might sound a bit odd. And then followed by Andy Carroll pen, not far away from it, because I think those two things are linked. And I want to go find out how far away those two things were. So I'll ask you in a minute where you think they were. And then I would have the Hutchinson comments last. I do think that was important for Hutchinson getting isolated from the team, but I think Sellers had already worked it out by that stage, and he just, you know, that gave him his excuse to get rid of Hutch, who I think he gave a lot of time to be fair. Took him to a lot of, like, you know, media interviews with him and stuff, so clearly at least had some sort of trust in him from a semi-captain, I don't know, point of view. But that went out the window then. I think that was more just a Hutch and Sellers falling out in that particular situation. So yeah, I'd say Millwall 4-0 and Andy Carroll number two. But what would you go with?
It's different. They are quite significant for various reasons. Otherwise, you wouldn't have picked them. Obviously, you know, great question. I think the Millwall one, because it showed us as a fan base that these players can play, and actually when they've got the shackles off and there's a little, well, a lot less pressure, they can just go and do it. I mean, obviously Millwall didn't have a, you know, if we're being really picky, Millwall didn't have a good start to the season at all and didn't really get going until just before Christmas. They changed manager and stuff. But for me, I think in terms of dynamic and, you know, getting rid of those dinosaurs and relics, Hutchinson's interview was number one, because actually he might well have taken a gun and literally shot himself in the foot with that. It was career suicide for him to do that. I think he thought he was doing something that needed to be done, but all it showed to, well, certainly to me and I guess to other fans, was that he was living in an era that was never going to come back at the club. And actually what everyone needed to do was get behind the youth and the young players and really kind of push them on, because we have had, you know, season after season, these journeymen, these you know, players that have played at the top level that are looking at Reading as a kind of a final cash cow potentially and a bit of an easy ride. And I think at that point, the fan base went, nah, stuff you, mate. Like, not, you know, you don't need to come out and say this. And I said it at the time, you know, fairly strongly, I believe, all of that stuff should have been done in-house. So all it did really, I think, was spur the fan base on. I say all it did, it was quite significant. All it did was kind of push the fan base towards those young players and to really get behind them. It made sellers realize that actually a lot of these old players needed to be completely jettisoned. And actually, you know, kind of invest in what we've got, which is what, you know, Bowen sort of tried to do in terms of those puzzle pieces in the summer. It's what sellers was basically made to work with and has done, you know, I think reasonably well in most areas in that respect. I think Millwall game's important. I don't think the Carroll penalty miss was massively significant. I mean, obviously, as a result, it was pretty shocking. But, you know, I didn't really see Carroll sticking out for that long anyway. I think the main surprise was that he didn't go in the summer. We were a bit desperate at that point. So that would be bottom for me in the list.
I think you've argued really well for the Hutchinson interview thing there. I think that is really, I think that's a good point. So I had a little look back just to try and remind myself how these things, how the chips fell with all of this. So Reading beat Millwall 4-0 on the 8th of August. And then
Crikey, 4 days. The 8th of August. I know,
the 8th of August. And then 4 days later, they went to Port Vale and lost. So I misremembered that. I actually thought Millwall happened after Port Vale, but I guess I'm wrong about that. But Port Vale, you know, and the Andy Carroll penalty miss, regardless of whether I think it's a significant moment, because I think the Millwall thing is more significant personally, just because it showed sellers the quality of the players that he had at his disposal, if he used them correctly. If you look at the next lineup for Reading, so we lose 1-0 to Port Vale in that game. We then go and get our first win of the season a few days later at home versus Cheltenham. And that was with Vickers and Kelvin Ahib-Hashiman starting up front. We had Mamadi Kamara on that day. We had Savage. We had Matt Carson. And Benge was starting at right back. And that was the first time we saw Bindon and Abbey together as the center back pairing. So clearly in those 3 days, you know, there was a huge change in the players that Reading were going for. Tom Holmes was gone. Nesta Guinness Walker was gone. You know, a lot of these players that just, you know, couldn't cut it were gone immediately, basically. And obviously they kept popping back up, you know, between then and November until sellers finally worked out his formation. But there's a significant change immediately right after at that Carroll miss. So I think that you've convinced me that the Hutchinson one was more important than the Carroll miss, maybe, because in terms of like spurring the team on, that was probably pretty important for sellers. Mm-hmm. And the Carroll miss is more about sort of the switch in personnel. But I still just think that Millwall result is what allowed sellers to feel confident in that switch in personnel. But this is a great question. Really good question.
I mean, on that note, you know, you mentioned three players there, Carroll, obviously Guinness Walker and Tom Holmes. Whatever you think of Tom Holmes as a player, you have to respect the ability to bounce back and to really knuckle down and stick with it, because, you know, I went for a period where I was watching the under-21s a lot when they were playing at the SCL, and he featured in a lot of those games. And he wasn't brilliant, obviously, as any player would be when you've gone, right, you've been a regular for, what, 2-3 years, and now I'm going to bomb you out to the under-21s. He could have turned around and said, no, I'm not doing it. Get lost, get me a transfer or whatever.
Right.
And he found his way back into the team, you know, largely out of necessity from our point of view in terms of Avi going and everything else. But I've got a lot of respect for Tom Holmes, because he could have just chucked in the towel and gone, I'm not, it's not for me. But he really gave it the beans. He was turning up to away ends and watching the games with the fans and stuff. And, you know, I have a lot of respect for that. I really do. And when he's there, when he comes around on Saturday at Blackpool, he will get one of the biggest claps for me, because it could have gone south for him, but he brought his way, you know, pushed his way back in and fought for it. And you know, if it wasn't for the injury, which, you know, has obviously given other players opportunities and they've done fantastically well in his absence, but, you know, that there was an opportunity there for him to go, I'm not doing it. So fair play to Tom Holmes. You know, I have a lot.
I like what you said there about him being in away ends and stuff too. And I think I've seen, certainly from a few weeks ago, it was him there with Tom McIntyre and maybe Abby and some other lads as well. And Abby less so, obviously, more very much the two Toms there. They're just like obviously huge Reading fans, and they bleed that town as much as that club. Like the clips of them on the streets of Reading during Euro 2020 when England were playing well are just amazing. Like those are guys that were connected to their community. They love football and they want to, and you know, they're just, you know, young men trying to make their way. I think it's sad that their period of growth into full-time professionals has coincided with one of the worst periods at the club that they love. And that has dragged down at times their reputations for reasons that are beyond them personally, in my opinion. There have also been times when they've made mistakes, and we all know about their, you know, their strengths and weaknesses as football players, obviously. But I just think it's nice that now they can go back to being fans of the club, and they still clearly, the fact that they have already been coming back and watching and cheering on the, you know, the team, it just suggests to me like what a relief it is for them, and what a weight off their shoulders it is for them to be able to actually just cheer for the club again and not have that responsibility on them. Again, you know, maybe they could have become even better and done even more, but I'm very proud of how those two players have developed. I think Reading have done a good job developing those two players, and yeah, I'm just happy for them that they can enjoy the atmosphere around the club again, even if they're not currently playing for it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm one of those people that when a player leaves the club, I'm not interested, not because, you know, I hate him or I'm, you know, jilted lover stuff, but I couldn't care less, really. Like, crack on, good luck with it. But, you know, certainly when Tom Holmes leaves, I wish him all the best, and I hope it does work out for him at Luton. And, you know, whatever league that is, it looks like it's going to be a Championship, unfortunately, for them. You know, they've done remarkably well to compete as well as they have done in the Premier League. But, you know, whatever happens to him at Luton, I hope it goes really well for him. And, lot of respect for him this season. Good question, Benjamin. Like that a lot. We're big fans of that. And your questions in general, actually. So always get us
good. That's actually, moment of applause for Benjamin Vickers in general this season. Good contributions to the mailbag. Thank you, Benjamin.
He's done really well. If you want to sponsor us, Benjamin, get in touch and we can sort something out for the mailbag. Who knows?
Right. We can always think of more things to buy.
Yeah, we can. Yeah, money to waste. We're not wasting money, obviously. We never do that.
Right.
Right. Paul Gelsetzer, I hope I've said that right, Paul. You have appeared in the mailbag before. Not literally, just your questions. But I hope I've said that right. If I haven't, I'm apologising. Right now, I'm saying sorry for that. Well, I'm going to get to your question anyway. So hopefully that will serve as a good sorry for you. Do you think the players out of contract in the summer will re-sign given the broken promises of the current ownership, even if a new owner comes in? That's a barnstorm of a question, isn't it?
Yeah, that's a good one. And I'm glad we've been asked this one. I kind of wanted to talk about this with Wing and Wing staying. So if the ownership stuff happens in the next few weeks we are able to start investing in the squad and the club. And I know we're still under transfer embargo, but, you know, just able to make sure that all of our bills and everything are paid properly, get the club properly functioning again. I think most people would concede it's quite clear, even myself, that Lewis Wing is going to win player of the season next week. Just another free kick goal against Burton as the votes are finishing.
Do you know what?
In,
and we'll I realized this just to interrupt you there, Ross. I realized this because the other week I was like, well, it's definitely Bindon. And then he scored against Barnsley. And the pod after that, I was like, well, it's definitely Lewis Wing. So, I have flip flopped, but I think you made the point excellently there, is that because he keeps scoring these bangers, and at least, you know, I say contributing like Tyler Bindon hasn't, that's not true. But like in terms of what Lewis Wing brings to the table in terms of those goals, for that alone, I think Bindon will run him fairly close, but it's Lewis Wing's now. You know, that's just being honest.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, carry on.
Well said. But I just think that Wing is going to win player of the season, right? And so Wing is going to go into this off season for Reading being their most important player, their most valuable player, probably, even though his age is 28. So if someone's going to come and take him, they need to come and grab him now if they're going to make him a part of their team. But if we look at what he's done, I think he kind of needs to be almost like in charge of what's going on. So I don't know, you know, like obviously at Reading's level, he can do that. If he goes up into the Championship, does he have to share those sort of midfield responsibilities with someone who's just as good as him or something like that? It might not work out as much if he has to operate like that. I think that Reading are going to keep Wing, but I think the new ownership group can probably get Reading fans on side pretty early by making a splash and making a deal of Lewis Wing staying. And I don't know if that's, you know, upping his contract or reorganizing his contract so that he has more security now with the ownership group coming in or something like that. But he's got 2 years maybe in him, two or three now, where he can continue probably playing at this level and being the sort of main man that this team, I mean, this team is built around Lewis Wing. That's kind of like why the substitution happened on Saturday to move Wing into a different position. So I think the ownership group can make can make fans happy by making it clear, yeah, we're not taking any bids for Lewis Wing this summer. And then, yeah, building the team around him for the next couple of years, basically.
Full disclaimer, earlier on in the podcast, I said about Lewis Wing saying that he was going to stay, and if someone like Middlesbrough came in for him, he would probably go there. And Ross said he wouldn't want to go back there, and I thought, that's a weird comment to make. And I've just remembered that he was at Middlesbrough. So no, I don't know what happened. I'd like to say sorry to everyone listening. Allow that this feeds into the fact that this is a completely unprofessional joke of a podcast. So what I mean is someone it's like Cardiff or Norwich or someone like that,
yeah,
is what I mean. I could have picked any one of 24 teams in the Championship currently. Well, 23, because we've already gone. I just had no idea that he was...
He's from that neck of the woods too. So, I mean, like, apparently, I mean, maybe he would go back up there, yeah. Or if Sunderland came in for him, maybe he'd go back.
Do you know how many
up,
appearances he made for Middlesbrough off the top of your head?
I do not, no. Please educate me.
Have a guess.
Oh, 25. I think he's a bit of a journeyman in the Championship, wasn't he?
He made 80.
Eight. Oh, okay. Oh, okay. Odd little career.
And he scored 12
Lewis
goals. So
it almost strikes me as a career of like a John Swift alike, who's gone off the boil for a season or two, right, at a key point in his career. So that's why he's ended up, you know, slogging it for us, basically. But yeah, no, I think the team has to be built around him next couple seasons. Really, he's so useful.
I mean, I guess it's difficult because we don't know what the new players were promised last season or the start of last season. So I highly doubt they were given any, you know, reassurances from Dai Young or Dion Pang or anyone in that group, really. It would have all been through Mark Bowen. So we don't know what Mark Bowen said to them. I think on the pitch, there's been spells where it's all worked pretty well, given everything. Yep. I think we would have been, obviously, and anyone listening to this will know that this is true, and this isn't opinion, is that, you know, all the off the field stuff stops when it's become a better football club on it. So I don't know what they were given. I guess they were sold a certain package or a certain this is what we want to do. The main thing is that we've kept a manager in place, even though people like me were calling for his head in October or November or whatever it was. But, you know, that's one of the first seasons we've had for a long time where we've had the manager all the way through the season, which in itself is a building block to success in terms of that consistency and stability and all that kind of stuff. I feel like, and this is not me being in the know or anything like that, I feel like the ownership will be resolved or the takeover will happen pretty soon into the what you call the off-season, Ross. So that will, as I said earlier, that will give us a good opportunity to act accordingly and kind of move pretty quickly on these players. And then yeah. It's up to them. You know, if they're out of contract, they go, right, we've got a new owner, this is what we want to do, take it or leave it. And if anyone wants to go, I honestly don't begrudge them leaving. I'm not going to go, oh, well, he should be staying. Like, that's fine. Because when you have a new ownership and a new cycle come in, you've got to believe in it 100%. And if you don't believe in it, there's loads of other clubs out there. So, you know, if you want to go, shake your hand, say thanks very much, see you down the road. I think a lot of players will be pitching to stay, but it does come back to minutes and how they've been handled on the pitch. So it's a good question. It is a good question.
I think if you're enjoying your job in any, in any walk of life, you're less likely to leave. And obviously there have been like troubles for lots of these players. And we've gotten some insight from some of the families too on how that's impacted them. And obviously it's not nice for any of the players to go through, but a lot of them are young. So like the impacts on their family should be limited, obviously not minor or minimal, just limited versus some of the players like Lewis Wing, you know, like James, Oliver Pierce a few weeks ago, he spoke to, who has kids, young kids that he's dealing with at the same time as all of this. But I think that when you're going to work every day and you're enjoying what you're doing, which these players clearly are based on the, you know, celebrations from some of the recent games, yeah, I think this is an atmosphere that players are going to want to stick around in. I think players like staying in content locker rooms, and it appears to be.
And ultimately, we can go back to really linear, simple stuff about being paid on time. Like, that's a massive thing. Like, even if you've got money in the bank, you've got savings or whatever, it doesn't matter. There's still an element of being valued in terms of being paid for what you do, regardless of what job you do, whether that's professional football or whether that's a teacher, whether that's, you know, civil servant, whether that's working in private sector, whatever it is, you want to be paid on time, and you want to know what you're getting each month. And if that's not on the table, even if I had the money, I'd be like, right, I'm off then, because there's no respect there. There's no kind of, you know, institutionally stable mechanisms in place to be able to move us forward. So I think that's going to be a big thing for a lot of these players, and rightly so. You know, we can go on about how much people earn and all the rest of it, but actually it just comes down to the basics of being respected at the end of the day. So,
and we want to be, I don't know how you feel about this actually, but like, I've always been somewhat proud of Reading's status as like a family club, and their commitment to just being, you know, a friendly space for people to watch football and things like that. And if we want to be a family club, like, we got to be a family club for the players as well as the fans. Right.
Yeah. So, and, you know, there's work to do, you know, with those elements, there's work to do. There's still fan groups we're massively going off on a tangent now. We'll talk about this more in the summer. But yeah, you're right. Historically, we have been a family club. We've been a community club. And that's what we need to get back to sort of long term in terms of driving these things. Yeah. Alistair says, who do you want in goal next season? Ben Foster's GoPro. That's it.
Right. Yeah. We want Ben Foster. I want Ryan Reynolds in goal.
Yeah, exactly. So, you
know,
yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. Pereira with a badass eye patch. I want him to have some sort of cool piece of equipment that he's using to hide that scar.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I realistically, it's Pereira. And unless something incredible happens, and there's like, you can't turn this player down. But I think, again, we're looking at consistency, Alistair, and that's kind of the theme of this pod, really, I guess, in terms of building. And if you start chopping and changing the goalkeeper again, you know, Pereira's done all right for me. Like, I think he's okay. Mm-hmm. And I think the more he plays and the more he knows that he's going to be number one, he's going to be a lot more confident. So for me, Pereira, I think Ross is pretty much nailed on Pereira as well. So, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, Pereira makes agile saves. And I think that some of the issues from like crosses have hit both of Reading's goalkeepers this season, just because Reading haven't been great, especially in the first half of the season, defending crosses into the box and set plays. They've gotten worlds better at that. Worlds better at that since Mbenge and Binden started performing together. And if that continues to improve, then that should only make the goalkeeper's life easier. So, yeah, I think Pereira you start with. And if it's not working out, you can look at Boyce Clark until January, and then go get a new goalkeeper.
Yeah. Final question comes from our very own Tom Hill. And he's put a stock photo of what I can only describe as a Morrison's six-pack of soft white rolls. He said, what do you call one of these? Anything other than a butty or a balm cake?
He's from up north, isn't he? So he's got some weird words for things, you know.
Well, he said anything other than that is wrong. I don't know what a balm cake is. I mean, they're rolls. They're soft rolls that are incredibly versatile and will stay fresh for most of the day if wrapped in tinfoil. So for me, they are a roll. What do you call it? Can you see it if I show it?
I can see it. I can see it. I'm looking at it. Don't worry. Yeah. They're like sandwich or burger buns, aren't they? You'd slice that in half and then you just put a burger on it. No.
Yeah, well, these would be good. I guess these would be good burger buns if you eat burgers. What do you call them? You don't have these though, do you?
Yeah, we do.
You don't have these really.
Yeah, you
but
can buy those.
But they're not. They're like bakery produce. Don't really do bakeries in America, do you?
Oh, you need to come to an American supermarket as well.
Or
is there
like a bread scene that I'm not aware of, a secret bread scene?
We're quite lucky up here in Maine in that a supermarket called Hannaford is our, like, they're pretty much the monopoly supermarket provider here, or grocery store.
Okay. Can you say another one just in case someone's listening to this and we get done for it?
Shaw's, Star Market.
That's fine.
Stop and Shop.
Yeah, we've got a few in there, yeah. Whole Foods, are they big in Maine?
Whole Foods are over here, yeah. There's a good Whole Foods in Portland, which I go to fairly regularly, like it over there. But, you know, we've got quite a fancy supermarket is kind of like our go-to standard chain here. And they have these large open bakery sections that my wife and I have often complained are making us fat. So don't worry, we've got buns. These are just hamburger buns to me with some like semolina on top.
But that's an English, no, that's like flour, it's like dusting. But that's like a proper English bun though, isn't it? Or a bap.
I guess.
Could be a bap.
A bap. Yeah, if you're going to call it a bap, then maybe, you know, like if some lovely old lady in a Lancashire, you know, bakery is calling it a bap, then it's different. But like at the end of the day, starch in a roll formation.
Yeah.
Yes, you can buy it like that in America where it's all coming off like one particular thing that they've baked together. Food over here, it's you can get just about anything food, but all right, there's lots of stereotypes about the Americans and their food, and some are right and some are wrong, but the general thing to know about food in America is you can get just about anything over here.
Okay. Well, they're not what you said, Tom. A butty is a sandwich, so it's when you've actually made it. So a chip butty, for example, you get chips in the chip shop, you put them in and you make a sandwich, that's a chip butty. So a butty is a sandwich with filling. These aren't what you're describing or what you've shown here, Tom, without lecturing you, all right? You're going to come onto this podcast. You're going to get things correct, young man.
Right. Okay? Yeah.
This is not a sandwich. It's just the raw ingredient for that. So it's a bun or a bap, and there's nothing else to be said about it.
And whatever a balm cake is, don't ever bring that south of the Watford Gap again, all right?
Yeah.
I don't want to hear it.
Go and drink some gravy or something. Go and shower a whippet. Honestly, unbelievable.
Right. Jeez.
Talking of whippets and gravy, we've got Blackpool. I don't know if that's relevant, but it seems like it's sort of in that ballpark. So we're gonna talk about them in just a very short moment after this break.
There's another huge game ahead for the Royals. So be loud and be proud for the big match preview.
Right, welcome back. It's gone chaotic backstage because Ross has just Googled a balm cake.
I'm not having this. It's not a real thing. It's just a bun.
Yeah.
All right, whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Well, before we talk about Blackpool and the festivities, we haven't really talked about the women a lot. We've tried a couple of things and they haven't come off. But one of our goals is to really focus in on the women next year in terms of the women's team. So we do say our sorries for that because we've not been good enough in that area in terms of shining a light on that and referencing and stuff like that. So yeah, that is our bad. No one's called us up on it, but you know, we need to do better on that. And we are looking at doing things that are a bit more proactive in that area. You will have seen that the women stayed up in their championship, in their division. Very, very difficult season for them, you know, very, very difficult circumstances at the start of the season when they were forced to go part-time They've moved away from Bearwood as well. They're training separately. Now, a lot of them are training, if not exclusively, at JMA, to my knowledge, which is a second school in Reading. I might be wrong, but that's the information that I've been given at this time. And they've been able to stay in their league with a couple of games to spare after a 1-0 win against Durham at home. And that really is fantastic. We've got both our teams staying in their respective leagues, whereas last season we had both our teams getting relegated from their respective leagues. It's a real positive. Yeah. So well done to Liam Gilbert and his team and his players. And we hope that we can we can do more stuff on you, but also that you pick up results for next season, really.
Yeah.
The other thing as well, massive shout out to Noel Hunt and his group of staff for what he's done with the under 21s. They're currently, as it stands, 2-0 up against Nottingham Forest in their league. But, and I just wanted to share this with you, Ross, they are competing, as we kind of know, again, we haven't really spent too much time talking about the under 21s as a collective, but they're in a league with Tottenham, West Ham, Fulham, Liverpool. We're currently fifth as it stands right now at time of recording. Chelsea, Arsenal, Middlesbrough, Wolves, Sunderland, Brighton, just to name a few. That's not all of them, but that's most of the league there. Quite incredible when you consider the riches and the resources that those teams have at their disposal, not just in terms of facilities, but in terms of scouting networks, in terms of bringing the players through, in terms of the geographical size of those areas that we're dealing with, in terms of pulling the talent towards them.
Yep.
And he's basically pushed us towards potentially getting back into Europe again. Whether or not that happens, we don't know. But they're not a million miles from that, and that's quite an incredible achievement, really. So however it stands or however it finishes this evening against Forest, massive congratulations to Noel Hunt and his team for what has turned out to be a really, really good season there. So well done, and thanks for everything you've done. It's great stuff. Talking of thank yous, we've got an opportunity on Saturday to really say thank you to the club, employees, staff, players, fans themselves. There's a lot of fan groups that work really hard this season. One of those is, of course, Star, who have set up their Dia del Jefe. Great name, by the way. Wonder where they got that from. It means Boss's Day in Spanish. So, looking forward to that. Lots of cool stuff going on. As we mentioned, Renegade have kind of issued a new beer, El Jefe, that they will be selling. There's paella, there's a DJ, there's a massive flag that you might have seen on social media, which looks incredible. Have to say, it looks really, really great. And it promises, Ross, to be a really positive day down at the SCL. Do you think we're going to get anything on the pitch? Bearing in mind Blackpool were kind of pushing for playoffs, really, that they're going to need to win to probably get in there and cement their place in the top six. Do you think we can get anything out of them?
I really want to say yes, because obviously, like, it's the last game of the season and we don't want to go into after the emotional climax of the last few weeks where we were able to basically stay up with the point against Barnsley. It would be a bit of a shame to go into the off season with two losses, but warning bells. Blackpool have won four in a row. They are in eighth place, massively pushing to get into sixth place, obviously, before the end of the season. And they will know that they have a tremendous opportunity to do so against us, because their competitors are Oxford and Lincoln City for that place. Now, Oxford have been trailing off in the last couple of weeks and not playing well enough. And Lincoln have to play Portsmouth on the final day of the season. So for obvious reasons there, I think Blackpool are going to think that they have a very good chance. They're 1 point behind right now. And like I say, they've won four in a row. I think that Reading can get a point out of this, because, like we talked about, Reading are certainly since November, they've been up there with all of these teams anyway. Blackpool are another team that have been playing pretty well since that period, so they're no mugs, and they're playing well right now. It'll be a tricky one. Maybe we can get a point, but if Blackpool come out at us all guns blazing in the first 20 minutes, kind of like Burton did, we need to be on it to get something from this game.
Yeah, I was just looking to see if Blackpool have a game. They're on 45. So yeah, we are their last game. They don't have any games left to play apart from us. There is a fairly strong chance if they beat us, they will get in. Obviously, yeah. Oxford, are, not obviously, but Oxford are above them on 74. Lincoln, 74. They're in sixth place on goal difference. Barnsley, 75. Peterborough look like nailed on, really, because they, you know, they've got two games to play. They're on 83, so they're in. And then it just remains to be seen whether Bolton can just about pip Derby, but that's going to be difficult. You know, there's a four-goal swing there, and they're 3 points behind Derby. So it looks like Bolton and Peterborough will be in the playoffs. Derby and Portsmouth going up automatically. We're saying, you know, anything can happen. We've seen that all the way through the season. Anything can happen. But, you know, it looks like that might be the case at the moment. So, tough game, really. We've said it before, and it's quite incredible that the season is over this early. I don't remember the season ever ending this early, really. Genuine question, Ross. Are you ready for a break? And not from the pod, I mean just from following Reading Football Club.
From following Reading. No, not until the ownership thing's done. And then obviously we've got plans for the summer, and the Euro will be fun as well. But no, I mean, like, I'm a Reading fan through and through, and at the end of the day, give it like a week or two off by the end of the international breaks. I'm always, you know, like aching for it to come back. And I like international football, but I'm a Reading fan. So it's what I want to see. That's kind of where I'm at with that.
I think it's been, when I look back, and we've talked a little bit about what we're going to do over the sort of the 3 months or whatever that we've got with no, competitive Reading fixtures. There'll obviously be, you know, pre-seasons and friendlies and stuff. But, you know, when you look back over the course of the season, it generally has been stressful, you know.
Yeah.
And when we were able to confirm safety the other weekend, like, I was just relieved, to be honest with you. Like, I was wrong to say I felt emotional, because I wasn't, but I was just, you know, you spend so long, and we had a pod quite a few weeks ago where we were like, you know, when we stay in the league, and then it all looked a little bit like it was slipping again, and potentially relegation was back on. But, you know, to get through what we've got through as a club, both off the pitch and on the pitch, and still be in this league next season is a huge achievement. So I guess I'm looking to Saturday as a kind of, you know, thank you very much, really. And you know, genuinely, because, you know, we've had seasons gone by before where, you know, the players come out and they clap, but there's been, what, 300 people left on some occasions, and people have just gone, right, I'm going. I really, really feel that on Saturday there'll be a lot of people left in the stands at full time to really kind of say well done to this group of players, and to congratulate not just them, but to employees behind the scenes. You know, we've said this time and again, you know, the coach and stuff, everybody involved. And I hope it's a really, really positive day for everyone. You know, hopefully there'll be a big crowd there, and we can go into the summer with a little bit of hope and positivity, really. So I'm looking forward to it. I am looking forward to it.
You know, I think actually, to re-attack your question after you've mentioned that, I think give it a few weeks. Obviously, the Euro will be a distraction, but I think a lot of us are going to be really eager for this Reading team to come back, especially if the takeover is completed, you know, before the end of May. And if it is, this is the most likable team we've had in quite a while. And it's got quality as well as being likable. I want to see how Sam Smith develops next season. I want to see if Reading come out next season in the same formation, or if, you know, knowing that they're going to face more low blocks, whether they're going to come out in something different. I want to see what Reading look like, you know, once their winger recruitment is done over the summer. There's a lot of interesting questions here. Yeah, I'm excited. If the takeover goes through, I'm excited for the next year, and for what this looks like, basically.
I mean, you know, you said likable. I'd argue that they're probably one of the most durable teams we've had in years as well. You know, obviously we've had the odd injury here and there, but we've never had, I feel, as many players available as we had this season on a regular basis. Yeah. You know, we've had one or two fairly big injuries and stuff, and, you know, obviously the obvious one is Don Ballard, who, you know, this season sadly ended on one of our most positive results of the season away at Wickham. But, you know, there are times when we've hardly had any players available because of their injuries and their lack of fitness, all this sort of stuff. I'm sure you'll pull up a stat, you know, at some point, but I don't feel that that's been the case this season either. And that's another positive in itself, you know?
We mentioned it last week. I think Wing and Smith weren't really fully ready to go until October. So I think, you know, you wonder what the season looks like if we had those guys both fully fit, ready to go, you know, from August onwards. But I still don't think that we would have made it to the playoffs. I think even if those players were fit, then that kind of like early season prediction I had made of like 10th would have been more likely. But I think that outside of Smith and Wing in the early couple months of the season, you're right, we haven't had any significant injury. It's incredible that Harvey Nibs hasn't had more just like stress or durability injuries.
Aziz,
for sure. I just bring Nibs up because the man's on the field with like a sprinting coach doing runs after games and stuff. Yeah. It is remarkable.
Binden, not had too much, has he really?
No. Yeah. Incredible.
Savage
has
stayed. I know he hasn't played as many games. Savage has stayed fit.
Right.
Yeah, bunch of players. So just going back to Saturday, the highest we can finish. I mean, this is a good one. The highest we can finish if we win would be 16th, and we're currently 17th. So that for me just sums up the season. And actually, you know, we can't. I mean, we could finish. Well, again, the lowest we could finish is 18th. Actually, no, that's a lie. Cambridge have got two games left, so we could fall a little bit lower. But anyway, we're not getting relegated. No one cares where we finish, apart from the fact we're in this league next season. Some big games coming up.
I already have something I massively care about for next season, though, thanks to the results of recent weekends. So let's see. And can you guess what I massively care about next season?
I think you care about being on a popular documentary that is streamed by Disney.
You're driving at the right thing for sure. Obviously, I want to do the double over Wrexham next year. I want to stuff them and have that on their silly little documentary. And I like that documentary, by the way. Like, I'm fine with them. I like Rob and Ryan. Like, I'm fine with the whole Wrexham thing. I just think it's going to be very interesting year when our fan base runs into theirs. And I want to do the double over them.
Right, we want that level of scrutiny. We want that level of popularity. We want to be talked about by everybody. So, I don't really have a massive opinion. I enjoyed the documentary. It's not the best thing I've ever watched. Yeah. I found it a little bit cringy in parts. You know, the kind of the way that they treat it. And, you know, someone mentioned the American. And again, it's not, don't start on Americans, Ross. But what I mean is, like, there's sometimes a bit of a lack of respect for traditions in this league. So you look at the Birmingham guy who, before the game, was acting like it was the NFL playoffs. I find that stuff a little bit overbearing and a little bit.
Don't like that. This is our house.
Yeah.
That's really common over here.
Man who's very reserved on most occasions. So the thought of doing that sort of stuff, I'm just like, nah, you're right, mate. Anyway, whatever. That's just personal taste. Ross, thank you so much once again. We've got one more in season next week, which will be. Well, we'll either be Sunday or Monday, one of the two.
One more chance for us to get our goals per game ratio up to, you know, a goal every other game, Ben. We're not looking good for this season, but we've still got one more chance.
Exactly, yeah. And we've got some sort of stuff planned for the summer, but if you have any suggestions of stuff you want to cover, if you really want to come on the pod as well over the summer, let us know. Let us know. We're always open to it. You know, that's how we found Ryan and Tom. Not Bobbins, because he's just been hanging around for years. But, like, you know, we're always looking to add to kind of people that we've got to just share different voices and stuff and different perspectives, because that's what it's all about, really. So if you want to come on, you want to have a chat, you want us to talk about something on your behalf, let us know, because we've got a lot of content or a lot of time to fill with content over the 3 months where we don't have competitive games. So,
well, speaking of content, Ben, just something else that's coming up this week. Later on in the week, I'm going to be chatting to Dan Wirth, who is basically the head of content and social for WhoScored.com. So WhoScored.com, obviously big stats site, and they do a team of the week, I think, is their most notable thing that comes out each week. They have sort of player ratings, which get used to kind of create those teams of the week. So obviously they are a stats kind of site, as well as a site where you can follow football. Dan is a Reading fan. And a big fan of Lewis Wing in particular. So we're going to have a chat later this week just about kind of how Who Scored works, how those ratings come together, and then also obviously a lot of questions about Reading and how they've performed statistically this season. So yeah, should be a really interesting chat.
He's just run the London Marathon as well. It's a fair play to him. So it's a big week for him. Tyler's End podcast debut and the London Marathon. And I'm pretty sure that he used to or did do the Rate My Breakfast thing on Twitter.
Oh, really? So,
okay. He's a man of all trades. If it wasn't him, he was very much connected with that. But
all right, I'll ask him about his breakfast when I speak to him then. It'll be early breakfast time for me when I do. So, you know, good question.
There you go. That's exactly what we want to do. Thanks, Ross. Thanks to everyone for listening. As always, really, really appreciate your support through what's been a very difficult season. Thank you to ZZZ Films, our official sponsors. Thank you for joining us on episode 377 of the Tyler Stem podcast. We will see you next week. Enjoy Blackpool. Enjoy Dia del Jefe. And we will see you next time here on our podcast. Take care. Come on, you Aussies.